A huge wave curling over itself, and a dolphin leaping through the air, trailing droplets of glistening water. BBC Natural World. A hidden ancient building in a carpet of densely packed trees.
Hidden in this jungle are 3,000 years of human history. One of the world's greatest ancient civilizations. Here, on Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, the Maya built cities, temples and palaces. And yet we still don't know how they thrived.
Traveling beneath the jungle canopy.
The forest has grown back, and nature has taken over again, leaving many riddles unsolved. Like the riddle of the missing river. Almost every other ancient civilization was founded beside a great river. But there are none here. Not even any streams. Where is the Nile, the Ganges or the Euphrates of the Maya?
A man approaches a green-tinged pool.
What they did have were thousands of these pretty little pools scattered through the jungle. Called cenotes, they're the Yucatan's only source of fresh water. Could they, by themselves, have supported an entire civilization? The Maya believed that cenotes were entrances to another world. An underworld. At face value, they seemed to be little more than beautiful jungle waterholes. So was the underworld just a myth? People today can do something the Maya could only have dreamt about. Breathe underwater. These modern explorers have made some remarkable discoveries, not only about the Maya, but about the forest and its animals too. What they've found in the underworld has changed our understanding of the Yucatan forever.
Secrets of the Maya Underworld, narrated by Simon McCorkindale. Divers glide through an eerily lit underwater grotto. Now a satellite picture.
The Yucatan, a peninsula the size of England, separating the Gulf of Mexico from the Caribbean Sea.
Now a man walking in the jungle. He has a bandana around his head and is wearing a backpack.
American-born Sam Meacham is a cave diver. He's been exploring the waters under the Yucatan for more than a decade. But he's still only seen a fraction of what's down there. His mission is to explore as many cenotes as he can, working with scientists to try to make sense of it all.
The puzzle of the Yucatan Peninsula is extremely complex. I arrived here in 1994 with the intention of only being here for 6 months, and 10 years later I find myself still here, so interested and curious in what I've discovered.
But Sam wasn't the first foreign explorer to be drawn to Mexico's jungles by a passion for adventure. Back in 1839, John Lloyd Stephens, an American diplomat and travel writer, set off into the Yucatan, inspired by rumors of a lost civilization. For a while, he found nothing, even though clues lay all around him.
Worn stone steps.
Finally, he stumbled upon the ruins of a great city, smothered by the jungle.
Roughly hewn stones piled on top of one another.
The wild tales that Stevens told made his name as a famous Victorian explorer, a hero of his time, and to some, the original Indiana Jones.
A drawing of Stevens crouching on the jungle floor, looking up at a prominent stone face jutting out of a wall. It has a pronounced nose, bulbous eyes, and thick lips.
Stephen's fantastic revelations have inspired a whole new generation of explorers.
For me, one of the great motivating factors in what we do here is that I'm able to explore in the 21st century, something I thought would never have been possible in my lifetime.
Just getting to the cenotes is an adventure in itself. Like the Maya ruins, they're scattered over thousands of square kilometers of trackless forest. But Sam's not alone. British-born Steve Bogarts shares Sam's passion for exploration. They've been cenote hunting together for years.
A pack horse picks its way over the uneven terrain.
With local help, they mount expeditions deep into the Yucatan's interior. It can take days to find a new cenote.
Sam Meacher.
As we travel through the jungle looking for cenotes, of course, there's always the usual assembly of spiny trees and cactuses. We have crocodiles, we have snakes, scorpions, tarantulas, you name it, it's all there. But really, if you know what to look for and know where to go and where not to go, you can avoid a lot of these problems.
A crocodile in the undergrowth moves its scaly head, pointed fangs hanging over its lower jaw. Now, Sam and the rest of his crew reach a shaded pool.
Finally, a new, unexplored cenote. Never mind the jungle treks. The real danger for Sam and Steve begins at the bottom of these enchanting little pools, considered sacred by the Maya.
It's very easy to see how the ancient Maya would have perceived the cenotes as very sacred spaces. They're absolutely beautiful jewels out in the middle of this jungle. And to walk up to the edge of a cenote and to look down into the crystal clear water and see the fish swimming below and the natural daylight casting these incredible shafts of light through the water is very inspiring.
As the sole sources of water in this jungle, these pools are also magnets for wildlife. And to cenote specialists like grebes, their whole world.
A small, duck-like bird is building a nest.
With thick forest on all sides, they seem as isolated as islands in an ocean.
From below the water, the bird's body looks a little like the rounded hull of a small boat. It kicks its webbed feet and drifts away, now hacking through dense undergrowth with a machete.
Peccaries, deer and other forest animals use cenotes as watering holes, but that doesn't mean they're easy to see. The jungle does its best to keep them hidden.
A small spotted fawn sticks close to its mother. Other animals are camouflaged by the dense vegetation.
But some animals you can't help but notice.
Howling monkeys, their mouths stretched wide open.
Howler monkeys. Even if you don't see them at first, you are sure to hear them. With calls that carry 5 kilometres, they're the loudest land animals in the world.
A howler monkey dangles upside down, nonchalantly.
Howlers are sloppy eaters. Coatis following below can fill their stomachs solely out of what they've dropped. Spider monkeys. They're infinitely quieter than howlers, but much more agile. With their hooking hands and long arms, these monkeys can live their entire lives in the dense forest canopy.
Two youngsters tussle whilst hanging from a tree.
For 9 months of the year, there is no rainfall here, and much of the forest struggles to survive. But some trees seem immune to the drought. What's their secret? Such are the riddles of the Yucatan. The answers lie underground, but Sam and Steve won't get to go there until tomorrow.
Now a crackling fire burns with orange and yellow flames. The warm amber light illuminates Sam and Steve, who are chatting together round the blaze.
In the dark, the jungle seems even denser, and the sounds even stranger. This is when cenotes really come alive. Tapirs love water, for bathing as much as drinking. But visiting a cenote means coming into the open, which, for good reason, they only do after dark.
A spotted jaguar watches as a tapir forages in the shallows, occasionally lifting its snout above the water to breathe.
Like watering holes anywhere, cenotes are where predators, in this case jaguars, come to hunt.
A few peccaries, small boar-like creatures, approach the cenote via a narrow trail. The jaguar silently pads along a tree trunk, twitching the tip of its tail. Its prey is unaware of its presence, until it's too late. The sound of its desperate squeals awakens Steve. He and Sam are lying in hammocks.
But to the Maya, cenotes were more than just jungle watering holes. They were central to their world. Cities and temples were often built right next to them.
Gently rippling water.
These sacred wells were gateways to the underworld, a terrifying place of spirits and of fearsome gods who demanded respect.
A distorted stone face is reflected in a pool.
At the bottom of many cenotes lie offerings made to the underworld.
Wafer-thin gold discs drift down through the water like falling leaves.
For archaeologists, cenotes are time capsules that provide clues to how the ancient Maya lived and died.
A half-buried pot, then a skull.
Sometimes even the people themselves were sacrificed to the gods they feared so much. Every pot and skeleton has its own story to tell.
Decaying bones are scattered across the bed of the cenote. Some seem to be from animals, others are human. A diver gently dusts sand away from a find.
The discoveries of underwater explorers are helping archaeologists rewrite the Yucatan's ancient history.
An archaeologist painstakingly excavates a buried treasure. Another diver puts a sample into a container marked with the initials INAH. Now, clouds drift across the sun.
Yucatan's explorers aren't just interested in the clues to Maya history that they might find at the bottom of these pools. They want to know what might lie beyond them. Is there indeed an underworld?
At the water's edge.
Could this cenote be a gateway to a whole new world? If it is, where does that world lead? Every new cenote presents a new opportunity.
Cenotes really present us with the truest form of exploration found today. When we come up to the side of a cenote, we literally have no idea what we're going to find at the bottom of it until we actually get in and investigate. And for me, that's one of the greatest thrills about what we do.
Ready? Almost.
Cenotes aren't just simple pools. They're caves, flooded caves whose roofs have collapsed. But Sam and Steve have yet to discover to what extent cenotes are connected to each other by flooded tunnels. If there is a network of tunnels down there, how far does it go?
Now, the two men are gliding through an underground tunnel.
What they're doing is carefully charting an as yet uncharted part of the planet, somewhere no other human being has ever gone. It's one of the riskiest things an explorer can do.
They glide through a narrow crevice, their torchlight illuminating the turquoise algae feeding on the surface of the craggy rocks. As they drift away, the fissure is once again plunged into undisturbed darkness.
This type of diving isn't for everybody. And definitely, you have to want to do it in order to be involved in it. The first cave dive that I ever did, actually, I was pretty nervous. Talked to an astronaut that sat on top of a rocket full of fuel and blasted off to the moon. Sure, I bet they were a little bit nervous, but look what we've gained through space exploration. All those people were willing to take a risk to achieve an incredible goal.
Sometimes there's hardly enough room to squeeze through. getting stuck, or damaging vital equipment now would be fatal.
We're diving in an extremely hostile environment. It's underwater, it's dark, it's easy to get disoriented, and therefore it's easy to have panic attacks. There's two ways out of a panic situation, luck and death, and therefore panic is not an option for us. You really have to take three deep breaths, calm yourself, and assure yourself that you're able to get out of that situation.
One of the men has become stuck between two sheer slabs of rock. As he struggles to move, his air tanks rub against the abrasive surfaces. After a tense moment, he manages to wriggle free, kicking his legs to propel himself into open water.
Exploration is rarely without risks. But one of the biggest rewards is seeing something that's never been seen before. What they've discovered down here is just staggering.
Blue torchlight illuminates a vast underwater cavern. Pillars of rock give the grotto a temple-like feel, while stalactites suspended from the ceiling resemble melted candle wax. The rocks are illuminated by a haunting green pallor.
The Maya did have an underworld. And it's as strange and as beautiful a place as any myth might describe.
Sam and Steve move gently onwards through the cavernous underworld.
They've revealed a vast system of flooded caves, underpinning much of the peninsula. It's changed our view of the Yucatan forever.
Shelves of rock jut into a sunken ravine.
In a sense, this is like exploring outer space. The weightlessness, the utter strangeness, the thrill of the unknown. Cave divers call this inner space. Sam has got close to a long-held ambition.
One of my childhood dreams was to become an astronaut. I'm not an astronaut now, but I feel that I'm as close as I can come to outer space exploration in the work that we do here. We're completely dependent on life support equipment. We travel into a completely alien and foreign environment that we don't know a whole lot about. And many of the cave systems that we dive in have seen fewer visitors than the surface of the moon.
It's amazing to think that a whole civilization once sat on top of all this, trying to imagine what was down here. The reality of this place can be as surreal as anything the Maya may have dreamt of. Sometimes, what seems to be air isn't.
One of the men appears to be surfacing, but isn't.
It's just a different kind of water.
The water he's now swimming in is motionless and crystal clear.
Some caves contain layers of water that just don't mix. There's so much about this system that we don't yet understand. Sam and Steve's aim is to find out how it all connects. They're making maps.
Their torch beams illuminate the pitch black ahead of them.
Light ahead reveals a new cenote. They'll record its position, then swim back to where they started the dive and try to return here, overland. The more they explore, the more connections they find. But they've got a long way to go. There are still thousands of cenotes left to investigate.
A black pool at the heart of a dense forest.
Hey, Steve, hang on just a minute.
The return journey is in many ways more difficult.
GPS puts us right on target.
Underground, they went where the tunnels led them. Up here, they're looking for one tiny pool among thousands, hidden somewhere in a dense jungle.
There you go, sorry.
For this, they'll need satellite positioning and aerial photographs.
Yeah, GPS puts us right
on it, huh? We should be...
be right here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's promising. Mm-hmm. Sorry about me.
State-of-the-art technology gets them close, but on the final stretch, they get a helping hand from birds. Turquoise-browed motmots. These are true cenote birds. They feed on the abundant insects near the water and often nest inside the caves.
Birds flying within a cave. Then a motmot holding a twitching insect in its beak.
Their distinctive call almost always means there's a cenote nearby.
A red-breasted motmot.
It was the ancient Maya who first used them as guides to water. This works just as well today.
A motmot lands on a slender branch. Sam and Steve look up to the trees, following the bird's distinctive calls.
Now they've located the new cenote, Sam and Steve need to find out if it has further connections with other parts of the system.
In our corner of the Yucatan Peninsula, the collaborative efforts of cave diving explorers have mapped and explored over 550 kilometers of underground, underwater passageway in over 100 different cave systems. The promise of future exploration is high. There's so much left that we still have yet to explore.
The two men walk down to the cenote, carrying their gas cylinders on their shoulders.
This may seem like nothing more than an elaborate game of join the dots. But each time Sam and Steve go back underground, they never lose sight of the potential dangers of their work.
One of the truisms of cave diving is that complacency breeds death. And every single dive we approach as if it's the first dive we've done. And we have a ritual that we go through of matching our gear, checking for leaks, and making sure that everything is in optimum 100% condition for diving.
Sam couldn't have a better dive buddy than Steve. He's one of the region's most experienced cave divers and a master technician. He knows his equipment inside out.
Everything good here? You?
Yeah, looks good.
Okay. Okay, one of the first things you'll notice is that we're actually taking two tanks with us rather than one. That's because we're diving in an alien, potentially hostile environment, and we need redundancy in all our life support equipment, and gas supply is obviously very, very critical to us. We also use a gas management planning rule known as the rule of thirds, so we'd use one third of our gas swimming into the cave, one third swimming back out again, so that when we surface, we have one third in reserve, and that's an emergency reserve should it take us longer to exit than we anticipated or if we needed to share air with a buddy.
Steve plunges into the pool. Then Sam swims over to a moss-covered tree root.
A thin piece of white string, carefully laid, quite literally becomes their lifeline. It may be the only way that they can find their way back, out of the labyrinth.
He secures the string to the root.
They mark it with arrows that always point back towards the entrance and safety. It's also a measuring tape. Regularly spaced knots tell Sam and Steve how far they've gone.
As we explore the cave systems, we try to be as smart as we can, and generally, we're trying to go in a particular direction, and we have compasses that work underwater, and using those compasses, we're able to determine which route to take.
Sam secures the string round a stalagmite.
It's quite common to come up to a split in a passageway. We have to determine which is the best route to take. In some cases, that'll end up in a dead end, and we turn around and come back out and try the other way.
He wraps the string round a prominent piece of rock before continuing on his way.
Using spools of string, Yucatan's cave divers have measured the longest underwater cave in the world, over 133 kilometers long. Exploration wouldn't be exploration if everything always went to plan. This time, The divers have come to a passage too tight to squeeze through, and they're forced to stop. They follow their safety line back and live to dive another day. But explorers wouldn't be explorers if they let such setbacks discourage them. There's always the thrill of the next dive.
It's pretty much guaranteed that every time that we go into a cenote, it's going to be a different experience. It's something new, it's something exciting, and that's what really draws me in. One of the many interesting things of diving here is to watch all the wildlife that thrives in the crystal clear water.
That includes sailfin mollies, small fish that stick to the bright sunlit zones in the open water pools of cenotes. For a male, it's a hectic life. He has a three-dimensional territory to patrol and is constantly chasing other males out while trying to keep his harem of females in.
A male herds his pale yellow mates.
In both cases, success depends on how effectively he displays his sail fin. It's a big job for a little fish.
The male raises his sail fin, which runs the length of his spine. A bird sculls past, then surfaces, before dipping its head below the water to check out the lie of the land.
Some fish, like these tetras, have proved to be real opportunists. They've learned to follow divers' torches into the dark to feed right inside the caves.
The tetras swim ahead of Sam.
Our divers take care not to bring any uninvited guests with them, because the underworld has its own unique creatures, an entire food chain of over 30 species that live out their lives in the pitch dark.
Small creatures, similar to woodlice with translucent shells, scuttle across the ground.
Most cave animals are white, because in a world without light, colour is pointless. Even eyes are useless, and many creatures just don't have them. Down here, touch and smell are all that matter. Among the strangest and most ancient of cave beasts is the remipede, a sort of primitive centipede that's rarely seen, found only in waters exceptionally low in oxygen. Relics of one of the earliest chapters of life on Earth, they're among the cave's top predators, combing the water for shrimps and isopods. If the remipede doesn't seem to know which way is up, that's because in the water and in the dark, up and down aren't so relevant.
A remipede lands on the soft sand and scurries along on its back, continually moving its undulating plethora of legs. A ghostly white fish is swimming above Steve's head.
In the underworld, even the fish are surreal, ghostly white, with blanks where eyes should be. There are other signs of life down here. This is the perfectly preserved tooth of a Gomphotherium, a relative of the elephant that's been extinct for 10,000 years.
One of the men carefully seals it in a plastic bag.
Ancient animal remains, and these stalactites and stalagmites, only ever formed in air, are hard evidence that these caves used to be dry. And Yucatan's history goes deeper still. The walls of these caves are made of soft limestone, telling us this was once a huge coral reef.
Now the two men surface in a covered lagoon. They look up at the ceiling of rough, red-tinged rock.
Some caves near the surface have air pockets and cracks in their ceilings that allow bats to come and go. Cave swifts, too. It's the perfect sheltered place to roost and nest. No wonder the Maya thought bats were from the underworld. They would have seen them flying straight out of the ground as night fell. By exploring underground, Yucatan's divers are peeling back the many layers of the peninsula and are slowly revealing the incredible relationship between its flooded caves and everything they affect at the surface. There are many ways in which these two worlds connect. Tree roots. This is the jungle's secret. How, with hardly any surface water, it can still grow so dense. Some trees and vines push their roots through gaps in the limestone to the permanent water supply below. It doesn't matter how dry it gets on the surface, they rely on the underworld. These deep-rooted trees provide animals with a year-round supply of leaves, flowers, and fruit.
Reptiles, monkeys, and birds feast on the abundant flora.
This vital connection between the forest and the ground beneath it must have intrigued the Maya. It could only have reinforced their belief in the power of the underworld. They too relied on its gift of water. A few cenotes could help a whole city survive even the harshest of dry seasons.
Ancient buildings on a hilltop overlooking the jungle.
But Sam doesn't just look to archaeology for his understanding of the Maya. He can talk to them. Woo! Direct descendants of the ancient Maya still live here. Woo! One of them is Don Fermin Zip, a good friend of Sam's.
Gracias a Dios Chuck, cada vez viene.
The Maya still practice slash and burn farming, growing crops, then letting the forest grow back to replenish the soil. In fact, the ancient Maya did this on a grand scale. Incredibly, most of the jungle here, previously thought to be pristine, has actually been cut down and regrown many times over the last 2,000 years.
The two men disappear into a crop.
The Maya may have stopped building large cities and temples, but they live on today as skillful farmers, thriving despite the thin soils and harsh seasons of the Yucatan.
A settlement.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Ya le quesh.
Ya.
Do you to mia? Ave Maria. Oui, ho.
Puro we.
Wa.
Puro wa.
Maya communities are close-knit, and the Mayan language is still spoken. Cenote is derived from the Maya word for well. Almost every village is built around one. Other cenotes mark boundaries between the communities.
A Maya woman lowers a bucket into a dark pool on a long length of rope.
Cenotes were, and are quite literally, central to their world.
As the bucket's raised, the rope runs through a simple pulley.
As well as a distinct language, the Maya have a distinct set of beliefs. Their stories and fables passed down the generations describe everything around them. The cenotes, the jungle, the animals. One Maya belief is that the powerful forces of the underworld determine their prosperity and their destiny.
Now, a piece of smoking fuel.
Don Fermin still practices the Maya religion. He prays to the gods of his ancestors and regards cenotes as windows into their world.
The smoke drifts through shafts of sunlight.
In advance of Sam's more difficult dives, Don Fermin sometimes makes offerings to the underworld, asking for a safe passage. And this dive will be difficult.
Don Fermin throws something into the cenote.
But it will reveal yet another twist in the Yucatan's many-layered history. A cosmic event that affected not only the world of the ancient Maya, but possibly the rest of the world as well.
a tranquil tear-shaped cenote in the midst of the forest.
Some cenotes near the northwestern tip of the Yucatan aren't at all like the one Sam and Steve are used to exploring. These are much deeper, sheer, vertical sinkholes, known as pit cenotes.
The two men gently sink through the green waters.
This cenote is definitely a lot deeper than ones we normally would encounter. Today we got to about 45 meters of depth and still we couldn't see the bottom.
They leave a trail of bubbles in their wake.
This appears to be the bottom, but it isn't. It's a cloud of hydrogen sulfide made from rotting vegetation. It's toxic and corrosive. Not somewhere you'd want to hang around.
The two men disappear into the thick cloud of mist-like gas.
The hydrogen sulfide layer is actually pretty intense. As you're descending down into the cenote, it gives the appearance that you're coming up on the floor, and all of a sudden you realize it's not the floor, it's a cloud. It's made up of sulfur primarily, so it's got a rotten egg smell to it. In extreme cases where it's very strong, you can feel it burning any exposed skin that you have.
Churning plumes of bubbles surge upwards through the layer of cloud, erupting at the surface of the pit cenote. The two divers make a more gradual ascent, eventually emerging into daylight.
Why are these cenotes so different? They're evidence of a critical turning point in the Yucatan's distant history. Something that was only noticed 20 years ago, when satellites gave us a new perspective on life on Earth.
The two men look up. A satellite picture.
If you look at normal cenotes from space, their pattern is scattered and random. But the pit cenotes form a distinct semicircle 165 kilometers across. Seismic studies have shown that the circle is completed under the sea. So what does this huge circle represent? The answer lies at least 65 million years ago, when the Yucatan was a shallow tropical sea. The disastrous event that caused the circle was so massive that some think it could have led to the demise of the dinosaurs. An enormous meteor, heading for what is now the very tip of the Yucatan Peninsula.
The huge meteor tumbles through space, then burns brightly as it penetrates the Earth's atmosphere. Seen from space, the impact is brutal and sudden, with a central explosion sending shockwaves across the globe.
Imagine at the moment that this meteor slammed into our planet, it was so huge that if one edge of it was touching our planet, the outer edge of it would be at the same altitude as a commercial jetliner flies today.
The immense impact crater was gradually buried under limestone, built up by coral reefs over millions of years. But the crater's shape was echoed in the way this limestone then eroded to form the distinctive semicircle of pit cenotes. When the Maya arrived, they built great cities and temples around these sacred wells, unwittingly outlining the footprint of this global catastrophe.
A tiered building.
Once again, the Yucatan's history can be read by looking deep into its landscape.
Stones making up the rough pyramid.
But it has one more secret to reveal, one last riddle to be solved.
In a torrential downpour, raindrops shatter the surface of a pool. A howler monkey shrieks in the trees.
When it does rain here, it rains hard.
Sam attempts to shelter under some leaves.
But this huge amount of water doesn't settle on the ground. It vanishes. It seeps through the limestone into the underworld. But this fresh water is only the top layer. it floats above an enormous body of much heavier salt water. This is the Halocline, the interface between the two. It's this contrast between the gin-clear freshwater and the hazier salt water that can make diving here so surreal.
The divers' lower bodies appear distorted by the hazier water.
Divers have discovered that the fresh water here does more than just float. It flows in huge underground rivers, probably the largest underground river system in the world.
The divers follow the path of a seemingly invisible river.
Nearly two centuries ago, John Lloyd Stephens rediscovered the Maya civilization. People have long wondered how they thrived without a great river. Now, we appear to have found their Nile. These great rivers must flow out to sea. But where? Sam needs to find out. He comes across the skeleton of a manatee, a sea mammal. He must be getting close.
An aerial view of the Yucatan jungle. Various cenotes are dotted in amongst the trees, their surfaces black from the plane's vantage point.
Meter by meter, cenote to cenote. Cave divers are mapping the rivers from source to sea. But while doing so, they've made an alarming discovery.
A circular saw in use at a busy construction site.
The modern world is taking over.
A street crowded with people.
I'm amazed at the changes that have taken place in such a short time in this area. It seems that every time I go out my door, there's a new building that's been built.
The coastal strip of Cancun and the Riviera Maya is one of the fastest growing tourist areas in the world.
There's one specific occasion where we're actually diving beneath a major construction project, and as we were diving along, the entire cave was literally shaking as we were diving through it. And it wasn't until the next day that we came back that we realized that they had been perforating through the ceiling of the cave, and along one of the lines that Steve had laid the previous day, there was actually a cement piling going right down through the cave system.
New construction could inadvertently block or pollute the great underground rivers of the Yucatan, with far-reaching effects still too complex for us to understand. The Maya underworld faces a new chapter in its long and varied history.
An engraved stone column.
The decline of the ancient Maya could teach us a thing or two. Some say they developed too far, too fast. Others, that a succession of droughts left them without water.
A skull carved in stone.
Everyone here still relies on the underworld. It is and always was the lifeblood of the peninsula. Without it, the Yucatan would be a hot, dry, and hostile place.
Swimming through an underground tunnel.
By mapping the course of every river to the sea, Sam and other divers are hoping to draw attention to them, so further damage can be avoided.
Beams of sunlight penetrate the waters.
Their work has not only helped us understand the Yucatan's past, but it can help to safeguard its future.
Sam glides a few feet below the surface.
Sam's journey down this river is nearly over. There's more light and more air, and the roots are roots of mangroves. And there are manatees. These gentle herbivores come to the underworld's outflow to drink fresh water and to cool off. What they mean to Sam is that he's made it.
The manatee looks like a large seal with a crescent-shaped, broad, flat tail. Its grey skin is tattooed with mottled patches of dark brown.
One last tunnel. And a journey that began in a jungle pool ends up off a Caribbean beach. Tomorrow he'll be back in the forest, looking for a new cenote and the next river. And when all the cenotes are explored and all the maps are finished, maybe the Yucatan will be better understood.
Sam looks at his coastal surroundings. A boat's floating nearby, and a stretch of golden sand hugs the shoreline.
In a more mystical way, the ancient Maya understood it. They knew they were at the mercy of the underworld. At the ruins, archaeologists are revealing ever more about this great civilization, how they lived and what they believed. But now, a whole new frontier has opened up underground.
Sam marks his underwater route with the white string.
Sam and Steve are not the first explorers to have been enchanted by the riddles of the Yucatan. But they have quite literally taken exploration to a whole new level.
To this day, it's only thought that we've charted a fraction of the Maya underworld, and many of these areas still remain untouched and uncharted.
Sam runs his torch beam over his mystical surroundings.
Sam continues with his passion. He certainly has his work cut out for him in the coming years.
My feelings about exploration can be very easily summarized in a poem that I read about the Yukon Gold Rush. And in that, the author says, it's not the gold, it's finding the gold. It's finding the cenote and diving down into it and seeing what's there that really is the thrill for me. Really, for all of us, it's a motivation to think that you can live in the 21st century and still be able to explore. We're only just scratching the surface of what exists here. I have absolutely no doubt that this place will continue to provide incredible scientific discoveries for years to come.
Sam and his explorer colleagues have risky, yet fascinating days ahead of them, unveiling the many secrets of the Maya underworld.
As Sam and Steve plunge deeper into the underworld, the light from their torches gradually fades away behind them, and the secret tunnels and passageways are returned to their natural state of darkness and silence.